Today is Thursday, April 29th, 2021. It's 1:39 in the afternoon. And hi, I'm John Williams. This is the Mincing Rascals podcast, we record every Thursday throughout Chicagoland. You can listen for me weekdays from 9 to noon on WGN Radio.
I'm Lisa Donovan. I write the Spin Politics newsletter for the Chicago Tribune.
I'm John Hansen, host of It's All Good, a Block Club Chicago podcast, and you hear me sometimes on WGN Radio.
And I'm Eric Zorn, the only panelist on this podcast whose name is not John, but my middle name is John. So if you want to call me John, just to avoid confusion, we can do that.
We have at WGN Radio Steve Grzanich, Steve Ruxton, Steve Bertrand, Steve Dale, and I'm missing some. If you're never certain who you're talking to on my radio station, just say Steve and someone will come running. Let's talk about somebody named Dr. Allison Arwoody. Promised Tuesday that I'm a little confused on where we are on this Vax Pass thing. Mm-hmm. My read on it is that she promised Tuesday that Chicagoans would not be required to show a vaccination card to do things. But at the same time, she said priority would be given to people with vaccine passes, like they're doing in other states, which could eliminate the opportunity for some unvaccinated people to do things. I do think it sounds like it would be exclusionary. In Iowa, they have legislation that almost certainly is going to get through the Senate. It's already gone through the House, and the governor is on board saying that it would be against the law to require a vaccination or a vax pass to get into your business or go to your park or do something in your venue. Lisa, why don't you start? I'm a little confused by what the city's position on this is and what should it be.
Earlier this week, Tuesday and Wednesday, both Dr. Allison Arwoody, she's the top public health director in the city, and then Mayor Lightfoot said that vaccination status would play a role in sort of getting people into various events. And it was dubbed a vax pass of sorts. But today the mayor really, really backed off of calling it a vaccine passport, a vax pass. In fact, she did not want it to be called that at all. She says it doesn't exist. And yet they're still moving ahead with this kind of program, this kind of concept. And what it is, it seems to me, it's a type of coupon. You show proof that you've been vaccinated and you will get preferred seating at some event, which is very different from sort of requiring it or having to show it to travel overseas or something like that. It would just be a perk. Because I do think there is a legal question about that, and I haven't studied it enough to go.
Well, do you like the
some
idea?
Some kind of law could be enacted.
I'm going to put you in charge of this. Legal Schmeagle, do you like the idea? Do you think that restaurants or municipalities should have the right to require a vax pass?
I don't know the legal.
I don't care about the legal.
I don't have the legal background on that.
I hereby make it legal.
I absolutely feel like a vax pass is entirely correct to use. I think that it's nothing all that new. We've required vaccinations for certain school districts, of course, in the past. And if that's the carrot that gets people across the line, then that's a great thing. It's not saying you have to get a vaccine. It's saying here's what you are not allowed to do. And now that we're at the point, I think everything changed Monday when walk-up appointments became able to do, right? I think we wanted to get to a point where every person who wanted to be able to get a vaccine had that equity and able to be able to do so. Once we got there, if you personally don't want to get one, why should that stop the rest of us who have from going out and having fun and helping support businesses? I think it's an economic thing. I think it's a social thing.
Yeah, well, I like the idea in general. I like it for private businesses in particular. I think if a restaurant wants to say, you have to have a vax pass to eat here, I personally would feel much more comfortable eating in an environment like that. I'm doubly vaccinated, I think, like everybody on the panel, I hope.
Nope.
I would feel more comfortable with that, and I'm perfectly fine. I think that a business has a right to demand that, just like they would have a right to say that gentlemen have to wear sport coats in their dining room. I think you could have it for a thing like Lollapalooza, the idea of carrot or stick here is we're sort of in the middle, right? If you can't do something because you don't have a vax pass, that's kind of a stick. The idea of giving somebody priority seating or something. That's kind of strange. It's like, you know, the no peeing section in a pool or something. if you're in a concert venue and you've got people who aren't vaccinated there, they might as well be sitting around you, I suppose.
Are you asking whether it should be the law, whether it should be required as law, or are you asking whether it's a good idea? I'm a little confused, John.
Well, maybe I'm doing both. Start with the law. Do you think it should be the law?
Say it's. I don't know the answer because I don't know what's allowed. I don't know what kind of civil liberties we're getting into that might.
Okay.
If I can jump in here, there was a Supreme Court case, and I believe it's 100 years old by now, but it allowed, I think it was smallpox vaccination.
Yep.
It allowed a community in Massachusetts to mandate smallpox vaccination. So it is legal under the law. Now, there is some question about whether that law would apply to these particular vaccines, because these particular vaccines are technically experimental, I guess, in some way, because they haven't gone through whatever 5 years of approval.
You can't impose it on people.
In concept, I think it's a good idea. If it's the law, if it is business practice, I would like people to have to get the vaccine in order to be around other people, because this pandemic is not over. And the reason it's not over is because people are acting like it is over. And we're seeing it. It's ravaging India right now. And these international boundaries are not going to keep whatever strain is ravaging India right now out of the United States. This is still a serious matter. And I still think that we need to take dramatic and maybe draconian public health measures in order to keep the economy going, in order to keep everything happening the way we want it to happen. You can't can't allow people just to say, oh, I don't want to get a vaccine. It might, Yeah, you have to. Maybe it's a risk. It's a very small risk, but this is what we do living in a society. I mean, I'm kind of militant about it. I think people should have to get the vaccine if they want to be out in public and around people. And even then, I feel like we really got to crack down. There's schools, DePaul, Columbia, places like that. Your students can't go back if they're not vaccinated.
They're private schools, though. There's a discussion about whether they could require that kind of thing. That's why I'm saying I don't know that. That works. I don't know that will happen. I'm not saying that it's a bad idea. I just don't know that if the law will back that up.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, vaccine hesitancy. I have so little patience for it right now.
You're going to have some patience for it, because I don't think telling people they have to do it is going to be what does it. But what has moved poll numbers? I mean, polls have shown over the last couple months about 15 to 17% more people are willing to get the vaccine. And I think it's solely because as more and more people do it, they talk about it. They talk about it amongst their friends, their family. It becomes more comfortable. And so if you incentivize it a little bit, all you're looking to do is get to a certain number. 65, 70, and then all of a sudden a few more people come along, and then you're at herd immunity. I think that if you make it a you must do this in general thing, that's going to get some people away. But if you say, here's your incentives, slowly but surely, you're going to get that number where you want
it. I do think it will become increasingly moot or irrelevant. That is, as more and more people get vaccinated, this isn't even going to be an issue. We'll be fine. You can go about. And it feels like we're there. And I take your point, Eric, but I think, by and large, people are going to restaurants. They aren't wearing masks on the street. You don't even have to wear a mask when Tucker Carlson is coming at you in the other direction. The CDC and Fauci say that's not a necessary precaution anymore. And I think what this whole vax pass thing is quickly feeling like to me, a vestige of the fear we had when it was its worst. We're coming out of this thing now. If you're going to make this the policy for the next 6 months or a year, I don't think it's going to be necessary. I'm not even sure I feel it's entirely necessary now. I don't worry about, let me put it this way, as a vaccinated person, maybe I should call myself out for that. I don't feel that threatened. And I don't know if you've been vaccinated. And I don't know when I go into a store if the people around me have been vaccinated. Sometimes I know particular people have not been vaccinated. And I still don't feel threatened because I'm wearing a mask. I've been vaccinated. So I don't feel the need to impose that on you right now.
John, I get that, except that the thing is that it's not just about you and me and everyone on the panel here. It is about the hospitals. It's about the public health care workers who are the first responders and so on, people who are going to be repeatedly exposed to this. I was reading that in India, doctors who have been vaccinated there are, because they're being exposed to it so much, have come down with COVID-19, and so it really is about getting control of this pandemic and getting us back to normal again. Yeah. I am probably not going to get it. You're probably not going to get it. But I just worry that we're letting it get out of control again.
Yeah. Well, and the more it spreads amongst people that haven't been vaccinated, the more times it enters another body is another potential chance for a mutation. And while the vaccine and so far seems to be holding up against mutations, the less people that you have getting this thing, the less mutations you're going to have eventually. And that's my concern.
Explain Iowa to me. The Iowa governor opposes vaccine passports. The governor there says her state must take a stand against them. And under a bill there, businesses and local governments could not even require, if they wanted to, forget about the option. It would be against the law for you to exercise that option to prohibit customers or visitors from coming into your stores or places of business. That bill passed the Republican-controlled House in Iowa, 5835. The governor's behind it. There's a similar bill in the Senate, so it looks like a slam dunk. The exact opposite of what you people are saying, Iowa's going to do.
You people, okay.
Was it purely on partisan lines in Iowa? Was that 5835?
It was not. There was about six of one that crossed over to the one side and about six of the one or a few that crossed over to the other. So, yeah, partisan lines, but there was a handful of crossovers.
It feels very political to me, just like this Tucker Carlson nonsense. It feels like we're still back in the COVID denier stage where people on the right, for some damn reason, don't want to take this pandemic seriously. They think that it's just the flu. They think it's going away in 15 days or whatever the hell they're thinking now. And it's infuriating to me. It really is.
I don't get how the GOP, the party that told bakeries they didn't have to bake cakes for gay couples, don't give the businesses the opportunity to be able to make whatever choice they want to make as a private business. It seems like a complete reversal, and I agree with Eric.
That's a really interesting point, John. Tucker Carlson, if you didn't catch it, and here it is, said that if you see someone coming with a mask,
they're the aggressors. It's our job to brush them back and restore the society we were born in. So the next time you see someone in a mask on the sidewalk or on the bike path, do not hesitate. Ask politely but firmly, would you please take off your mask? Your mask is making me uncomfortable.
He's flipping it on its head and saying, if you see someone coming down with a mask, now that they're saying you don't need him outdoors, that is some sort of militant statement that they're making in opposition to you. He calls them Biden mask wearers. No sense of irony. He doesn't know how to smile, so I don't know if he's being flip or not, but that's one. And then obviously the second thing he said was,
as for forcing children to wear masks outside, that should be illegal. Your response when you see children wearing masks as they play should be no different from your response to seeing someone beat a kid in Walmart. Call the police immediately. Contact Child Protective Services. Keep calling until someone arrives. What you're looking at is abuse. It's child abuse, and you are morally obligated to attempt to prevent it.
I just want to point out that the leading tweet right now in my Tweet of the Week poll is the party of open carry wants you to know that your mask is making them uncomfortable.
That is so true. Somebody texted in right away and they said, what about your gun is making me feel uncomfortable?
I think he's just trying to, quote, own the libs. There's nothing more that Tucker Carlson loves to do than to say something at 8 o'clock on Fox and see all of us talking about it the next day.
Fine. And, you know, here I am taking the bait. But, you know, this whole thing made me recollect was Jon Stewart when he was on Crossfire with Tucker Carlson. That was the bow-tied Tucker Carlson. And he said, stop it, you're hurting America.
This show as being bad. and I wanted to, I felt that wasn't fair, and I should come here and tell you that I don't, it's not so much that it's bad as it's hurting America. So I wanted to come here today and say, here's just what I wanted to tell you guys.
Yeah.
Stop. Stop hurting America.
Okay, now
and come work for us, because we, as the people.
How do you pay?
The people, not well.
Better than CNN, I'm sure.
But you can sleep at night. See, the thing is, we need your help. You're right now, you're helping the politicians and the corporations, and we're left out there to mow our lawns.
You just said we're too rough on them when they make mistakes.
No, you're not too rough on them. You are part of their strategies. You're partisan, hacks.
Wait, Sean. This whole exchange of ideas, especially now, folks are listening. He's the gospel. Rush Limbaugh's gone. And Donald Trump has been detweeted. So there's Tucker Carlson carrying the flag for this lunacy. And that argument, even if he's just trying to make a point, is hurting America right now. Stewart was right then, and he's right now.
Well, and also the great point of, you know, there's if there's one thing we need in this country, it's less people calling the police on each other. Think about how many
you want that
black
call?
Americans do not want people, you know, the police called on them. I mean, not to connect the two, but without a doubt, the last thing people want is more calls to 911.
Well, that's how stupid that was. Yeah. I mean, really, the cops want that call. Hey, this one guy won't take his mask off. Will you come over here? Yeah, they're going to jump in their squad car and fix that.
I wonder if are we going to get to a point in this country where it's kind of like in Japan, where wearing a mask, like in public transportation and so on, it's just like what people do. And it's not looked upon as a political statement. It's just like, hey, I don't want to get sick. I don't want to get the flu. I'm sort of wondering what I might be doing next winter if the Tribune is still in operation and we still have an office and I'm still going to it. If I'm commuting, am I going to wear a mask on the train? And I'm thinking, you know, why not? I had a particularly healthy winter this year because I was not breathing right. Anybody else's germs. So
cold and flu way down. I'll wear one at the grocery store and on public transportation, I think, for a long time. But will it ever be not political? No way. Not at least for a generation.
Oh, I mean, think it will, though. But don't you think Eric's onto something here, John, that in time the tide of people wearing masks will raise just a little bit. It'll be just a little bit more normative or normed. And even people who aren't named Norm will wear them, and it'll be less striking. You know, you'll just got some people. There'll be context to it. Get why some people are doing it.
I'm interested in how Lisa feels about this because she's got someone in her household who is immunocompromised.
Has a lung condition. So yeah.
So do you think you'll be wearing a mask longer than you know?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I do, and. I will say that I feel as though I always feel like I'm kind of a bold person, but I've had to travel to a couple places this year where nobody's wearing a mask, and I was actually a little bit scared that I was going to take some heat over it. I mean, I definitely was getting gawked at because I was in those places and could see their reactions, you know, the eye rolls and so forth.
Because you were wearing one?
Because I was wearing one. So I'm sort of bracing for that here. While I follow the science, I do feel that it's so early in understanding I don't want to say the efficacy. I don't want to challenge any of that, but just sort of what the vaccine protects, who it covers, how well it covers, because it's still very early. I'd rather just be safe. I'd rather have that added layer of protection. I believe in the vaccine, but I just want to make sure.
Don't the two of you feel it's a little bit like a courtesy more than – I think that's where when somebody's coming at you and Dr. Fauci says that you don't have to wear a mask now and Tucker Carlson thinks you should force them to take it off, I think if you see somebody wearing a mask, acknowledge that they're frightened right now. They're apprehensive. Maybe they haven't even had the vaccine. Don't judge.
Or they have somebody in their household who is particularly susceptible. If they get this, they will not survive.
But
they
won't survive. When I'm walking out in public, I carry my mask mostly. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's around my neck. But I'm not wearing it. And then when somebody comes by me, exactly, then I slip it up. And it's more a courtesy. The same way if I were a smoker, I wouldn't blow smoke in your direction. I will put the mask up just as a sort of nod to you. It's just a courtesy.
That's exactly the way to think of it, John, exactly the way to frame it, which is that when you're wearing a mask out in public, when you've been vaccinated, then you are doing that as a courtesy and out of respect to the other person. It's not – when I'm wearing a mask when I'm out, I'm wearing it because I – on the off chance that I'm carrying it somehow without me having any symptoms, it is a show to other people that I respect their health, that I'm willing to guard their health. And, yeah, wearing a mask is a little bit of a pain, but I'm willing to do that. That's the symbolism for it. And for some reason, that symbolism – is outrageous to some people. And I don't get it. They see it as fear. It's not fear on my part. Honest to God, I'm not afraid right now that I'm going to get the coronavirus. What I'm doing is I'm expressing a respect for the virus in general and a respect for the health of other people. And I don't understand why that's so hard to understand.
Just doing your duty. I mean, that's the way President Biden has framed it, as part of your American duty to do that. I think it's so easy to, like you said, John, it's like a tip of the cap to the person walking by. You just put up the mask. It's not much of a thing. And I will say, though, about the mask wearing, I don't know if you guys have experienced this. I have nightmares where I'm in a room and I'm around other people. And all of a sudden, we all realize, or I realize, that we're not wearing our masks. And it's this fearful moment. I don't, maybe that might just be me, but I've heard other people say the same thing. And yeah, I think it'll permeate. I think we're going to be really ready for the next pandemic whenever it comes. We'll be used to the masks by then.
Well, I was in the Ogilvy Transportation Center yesterday. I was catching a train, and as I was walking into the area to buy my ticket, my snap on my mask broke. So now I had a non-functional mask, and I didn't have another one. And I'm unmasked in an indoor space in a transportation center. It's a federal crime. And I felt like that dream where you realize you don't have your clothes on. You know, the one where you're naked, yep. And you go, oh, gee, now I'm here and I don't have my clothes on. Oh, how did I get myself into this jam? I felt the same way. So now I'm holding it up across my face and coming up to people saying, could you have a mask or I got to get on the train? Speaking of some of this, I want to talk about what Block Club Chicago has reported. I think they should win an award for their reporting on Loretto Hospital. Operators of that West Side Safety Net Hospital inappropriately vaccinated employees at Trump Tower and parishioners of a church that the CEO belonged to, and at a steakhouse he went to, and a high-end watch retailer that the COO favored. And now we read that Loretto paid millions to businesses owned and run by the COO's friend and business partner. So the departed COO, this Dr. Anash Ahmed, has a friend named Samir Suhail. In fact, it's his neighbor in Trump Tower, mm-hmm. who runs a company called One Health Billing. And that company is headquartered in Sahil's condo. His business does not have a website. It's not even registered with the state. But his pal, the CEO, is sending him $4 million in contracts last year or 2 years ago. Sahil's business, in fact, captured 5% of Loretto's total spending for that year. But little is known about what they do, if anything, and if their administrative services provide value to the hospital, if it was a good buy. We just don't know.
It's also so hurtful because it's Loretto. It's not a big hospital chain. Not that that would be okay. It's not a Northwestern. It's Loretto. It's a small hospital meant to serve really people in need on the West Side. And what was even so, I mean, too much of a coincidence to even say anything, the three companies were not even created until Ahmed took over as the CFO and COO. I mean, it's like perfectly lined up to look suspicious. Again, we don't know exactly what they did. We don't know what the bids were. It's just this saga continues with Loretto. And each time you turn over another leaf, it just gets dirtier and dirtier.
Yeah,
underneath.
So he gets the gig. And then his buddy goes, I'll create businesses that serve hospitals. You think there'd already be a pretty rich market there for that. He creates these three businesses. And then suddenly they get the contracts from his buddy's hospital, who is his neighbor there in Trump Tower. And the business is headquartered in his condo. No website. What good fortune that upstart business just happened to get the contract from Loretto. And you're right. So it continues to treat those the West Side patients as pawns. They're just in the way of this money-making scheme. Maybe they get treated, maybe they don't.
And it was maybe just 10 days ago where it was a Friday news dump. We were at Block Club Chicago on our Slack channel, ready to wrap up for the week and be all done, when they announced very quietly that, oh, the review is over of the vaccines, right. And all looked good. There was a few bad apples here, but it went okay. Keep in mind that this was a self-done evaluation by Loretto itself, trumpeted by the city as, okay, everything's A-okay. We're back on the square here. Luckily, there's reporters all over the city still digging into this. But
wait a minute. You don't think that a two-week vacation for the CEO was harsh enough punishment?
No, not quite. We'll wait and see. I don't know. It's too bad.
What saddens me is that I hope people are taking away from some of this is that the whole idea of these safety net hospitals are to help you know, the some of the poorest people in our city, in some ways, having a system like that does create this two-tiered health system, which is, in my mind, shameful. We should all have access to the same health care. So then for that institution to turn around and be used by somebody who's running it as an ATM machine for their friends or whomever, it's just painful. And who is recruiting these folks to run the hospitals? Whatever money went to pay for these contracts, they probably should have been used for outreach, getting people in, saying, hey, there's a clinic here to get your blood pressure checked. Let's test this. Let's do that.
Well, it makes you wonder what the role of the board is in a situation like this. They've been just as untransparent, just as invisible, if you will, as the CEO and COO, who still haven't given an interview, to my knowledge, to anybody on the record.
Well, I often wonder with those organizations like that how active the boards really are, and whether it's sort of, you know, you're on the board, it's sort of an honor to be on the board, but yeah, you're not doing the real tough due diligence that a board member has to perform when you're in a situation with that, where that kind of money is floating around.
Right.
You saw State Rep. LaShawn Ford resigned. I believe he quit because he did not feel that the CEO and some other folks were being transparent about how people were being,
how the vaccines were being distributed.
Yeah,
like
how
that,
they were being distributed, as well as how are people being sort of punished or handled or reprimanded.
I wonder also politically if that makes the most sense to get off that board as soon as possible. But
right,
you're right.
Yes.
He did say, he said it was because of the punishment or the lack thereof that that's what finally pushed him off that board.
This has nothing to do with LaShawn Ford in particular, but no. I always sort of wonder when you have these high profile people, these high profile busy people. LaShawn Ford was running for mayor 2019, he was running for mayor. That, you know, he's got a lot of things going on. When you have someone, you have a prominent name on your board, but is that person doing the grunt work, for lack of a better term, that being on a board of directors actually requires? Is this kind of a gaudy name? I remember Henry Hyde got himself into trouble years ago being on corporate boards where he was just kind of a figurehead for banks, I think, of banks and savings and loans. And he was like, oh, I don't know. I was just, you know, kind of, he was a name on the board to give the board some gloss and prestige, but he wasn't actually getting his hands, you know, on the numbers and providing the oversight. That's what a board does. A board is not like a club or a, you know, Hall of Fame or something. A board is something that is responsible for oversight on all these things. And that's, I do wonder about that when I see the kind of names that are on these boards. I wonder if that's part of the problem.
It's just a line on your resume, and it's good for both parties. And I think that's what Ford found himself in the middle of. I was critical of him when he left because he still didn't say much. I think there's a lot he knows that he won't say about what's happening at Loretto. Let me just read one other paragraph from this thing, from the Block Club story. On March 26, 2021, 2 days after Ahmed, the COO that we're talking about, resigned over the improper vaccinations, Suhail, his business partner, was removed from the state corporation registration, and a new individual replaced him as president and re-registered agent, Jamil Elkousa. Elkousa has been listed as an executive on the website for some of Suhail's medical companies, including American International Clinical Group and a Suhail umbrella firm named United Healthcare Investment Group. 2.5 weeks after Elkousa took charge of that business, SKS, on April 11th, he was charged with felony reckless discharge of a firearm after he shot a gun in his home and the bullet hit a family member in the chest, according to Cook County criminal records. He has pleaded not guilty to the charge. These are the people that are doing business over at Loretto. When I get to be king, we can have a commission to change the names of things. And some of the things, names can change. But there should be a reason to change the name in the first place of a park or a street, for instance. So if you've got a problem with Columbus or Balboa or Jefferson, make your case and we'll decide. But who did Lakeshore Drive offend? What crime did Lakeshore Drive commit that its name needs to be changed? Chicago's iconic curving lakefront highway is under the crosshairs once again. Chicago Alderman David Moore wants to rename LSD after the city's founder, Jean-Baptiste Pointe du Sable. There's already a school named after du Sable, and a park and a museum. I think our city's founder is fairly well known by name. We're all ignorant about our own history. Mm-hmm. I don't think naming Lakeshore Drive after him changes or fixes that. I think this is just a really bad idea.
I agree. I think that, like you said, when there's a need, when there's a reason, that makes sense. Lakeshore Drive, iconic. It's got a song after it. It flows off the tongue really well. It just feels right. And also, I understand that DuSable came in through the river right at Lakeshore Drive, but it transverses the entire city up and down to areas that were not anywhere part of what he would consider where he lived or founded. I think that somewhere around the river, you know, that maybe you could use a name of, but isn't the Michigan Avenue Bridge? That's the DuSable Bridge right now. And there's a plaque there. I think a little more education could be good. We could all learn a few more things about DuSable, but changing Lakeshore Drive just seems unnecessary.
I'm totally with you there on that. I don't like it. I don't mind the idea of someone floated the idea of changing the name of the Chicago River to DuSable River. Given that the city is named Chicago, you could have the DuSable River. I guess that requires some federal okay, but maybe we could do it like they do Pulaski Road in Chicago becomes it used to be Crawford, and then in Chicago we changed it to Pulaski, but it's still Crawford in the suburbs. Maybe we could just have it be DuSable River until it reaches the borders.
Well, isn't the mayor open to the idea of naming the river walk after it?
Yeah. I suppose the River Walk, or I mean, the River Walk is not nearly as magnificent a gesture as Outer Drive or the river itself. But Lakeshore Drive, there's the song, there's just, it is an evocative name, and it'd be a little confusing with Inner Lakeshore Drive now, keeping that name so that everyone who lives there can keep that address, because they don't want everyone to have to change their stationery. It's one of those ideas. John, I agree with you. I think it's like, it's not necessary. There's so many other ways that we could honor DuSable. I wouldn't even mind changing the name of Millennium Park, which wasn't finished on the millennium anyway. I think
I mean, it's only because that's benign. It's a lovely park, but if that was DuSable Park, the St. Regis is the name of the new curvy hotel next to my building, and it wasn't St. Regis last year.
We love to invent problems. I just think that's part of it here. We love to just give one more issue for everyone to yell at each other about.
By the way, if we did anything to improve the street names in the city of Chicago, I think we would try and thin things down a little bit. Some things have two names. Our interstate system has a numerical name, but it also has a person name. And if you were new to this city and you didn't know where the Dan Ryan was, you're never going to know what it's backed up on the Dan Ryan means. Do you know what the Jane Byrne is? if you were new to this town, you wouldn't, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's part of moving to a new town. They do that in a lot of places. They certainly do it in Detroit area where I grew up.
The
highways have names, and you just got to learn them. That's how you become a native, I guess.
Well, this name change thing's not going away. I know there's a commission through the entire summer that's going to be looking at, 41 different monuments, and CPS is doing their own separate thing and looking at names. So it's certainly not going to go away. My favorite renaming, though, was a bunch of high school students down on the southwest side, getting them to change the name from Douglas Park with one S to Douglas Park with two S's, originally named after Stephen Douglas, but renamed then for Frederick Douglas. That one just made perfect sense and symmetry. And that's the sort of name changing, I think, that everyone can kind of get behind.
That was great. And what happened was, for several years before the official change, they did some guerrilla changing where they went and painted the extra S on the sign themselves. So that was pretty cool.
Do you guys think that State Street should be turned into a pedestrian mall? Lisa, why don't you start on that one?
Well, that was part of the announcement today. Now, it's not going to be permanent, but the mayor announced as part of her sort of, we're slowly reopening the city's economy. One of her commissioners, I can't remember her precise title, it might be her transportation commissioner, announced that in July, on certain Sundays of through the summer, that State Street in the loop, a stretch of it, would be closed to car traffic, vehicle traffic. I was sort of laughing about that. It actually sounds like a neat idea. You'd get to sit out there, you could go shopping, you could just sort of hang out. But I was doing a little research in the Tribune Library, and that was something that was tried from the 70s to the 90s as regular malls, suburban malls took off. The mayor then in 1971 decided to kind of create the State Street Mall, and full time, no cars, no vehicles, only pedestrian. And it turned out to be a kind of a big failure. So Daley in 1993 decided, nope, we're going to go back and we're going to put vehicles and buses back on those roads and use them. There were a lot of things that sort of that evolved in there. There became some racial tensions that emerged in all of that, where it was sort of like, okay, the coming together of the city, it didn't quite work. There were parts of it that seemed like, you know, maybe Latinos, African-Americans hung out on one part of it, white people on other parts of it. The social experiment part of it didn't work as well. So now they're talking about bringing that back, you know, on Sundays as a way, mm-hmm. I think, just to sort of get people to come back into the center of the city. It's been so quiet there.
I get it for a fair or for a festival, but that nothing about a closed State Street makes me want to travel to downtown to walk on the asphalt. The sidewalk is big enough on both sides. I feel like every city tries something like this at some point, and then everyone realizes that it doesn't really attract anyone unless there's something on the street to attract people there.
Did Oak Park do this at one point also? Does anyone remember? I'm thinking that they tried mauling one of their main streets as well. And yeah, it's not like the perils of crossing State Street is ever what keeps me from going downtown. And the irony here is that shopping malls themselves are in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
That, you know, I do understand what the impetus was back in the early 70s, because shopping malls were just killing downtowns. Mm-hmm. I said, well, maybe if we make our downtowns more like malls, people will come. But now malls themselves are in a lot of trouble. So it's not like, hey, we'll make our downtown a mall. And that's a recipe for success. It's doing it one afternoon a week as a novelty. It maybe it's a cute thing, and maybe it will bring people back just for that. But I don't have high hopes for it.
Pay for people's parking for a Sunday, then I will come downtown. That's if you take the money you were going to spend on promoting this, on paying the security guards to close it, and give everyone $5 off on their parking, I don't know, that would get me to go downtown.
That's not a bad idea. A free parking for, you know, one Sunday a month or something downtown would probably draw a lot more people than the fact that they don't have to wait for a crosswalk. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I do understand the temptation, though, because I was in Arlington Heights this week, and they put up the stanchions or whatever you call them to keep cars from going through. They put when they closed out the downtown for the pandemic, and they've left them up, and now it's a lot of al fresco dining, and it is turning into a pedestrian mall dining area, and the town loves it. And this is happening in a lot of the suburbs of Chicago. Hinsdale did it. I'm trying to think of some of the other neighborhoods I've been through where they're doing it, and they might keep it.
Right. But, John, that's not about turning in your downtown into a mall. It's about turning it into an outdoor dining, expanding your sidewalk cafe into the street, which is really good during the pandemic.
I think that's part of it, Eric. I think that's what they're talking about.
That's what I imagine. I'm imagining that there'll be little tables out there and people will be sitting there looking at the other buildings. You know, John, you do. When I love the idea. And then you say, what about sitting and walking in the middle of State Street makes me want to go downtown? I thought, oh, nothing that comes to mind. But I'm imagining that it'll have more of a bistro feel.
You can be the spokesman first.
Yeah, that's a different concept. You have almost like a mini street festival. You maybe have some bands and have some booths.
Yeah, that may come into it too. They're working on it, making what did they call it? It's going to be a placemaker or something.
Better get your vax pass.
Yeah.
Well, some of that was staple on Navy Pier. They had jugglers and traveling musicians and people that were selling things. And there was sort of a street festival vibe on on Navy Pier, which I thought was actually doing a good job of gussying itself back up before the pandemic hit. I don't know what the future will be for that as a destination for tourists or Chicagoans. Let's just get to one other topic, guys, before we wrap it up today. Well, maybe two. And one is 22-year-old Anthony Alvarez had a gun in his hand, was running from police. He was shot dead March 31st. We've probably all seen this video this week, too. I just want to say people don't run and officers don't shoot. The guy shouldn't have been running. He shouldn't have had a gun. He shouldn't have been running from the police with a gun. And the police, it looks like, shot too soon again. I don't know how many times we're going to have to talk about this. And I'm exhausted by it, which should be the least of my emotions right now. But I don't have much more to say other than please stop running, cooperate with the police. And please, please stop judging and pulling the trigger so quickly.
Yeah, I am disappointed that the police waited so long to release this video. And then I'm also disappointed that they didn't have yet, as far as I know, to explain exactly why it is they were trying to stop Alvarez in the first place. Mm-hmm. And what it is that made them chase him. Was the gun he had, was he not licensed to have it? Even if he wasn't, I agree with you, John. Like, I don't get this one. It's very familiar, though, to me. I've seen a lot of police shooting videos in my time by now. And the idea of someone with a gun running away from police and getting shot, I don't know if he was shot in the back. I'm not sure about that, but it certainly looked like it.
Yeah.
I mean, he may have been inclined one way or the other. But it was a very, very sad, troubling video to see. I'm not an expert in the use of police force. That one did not look like he had to fire.
It had a little bit of a Toledo feel to it, too. Yeah. That sort of first person chasing. You're out of breath. Can you catch this guy? It's herky jerky. I mean, you are getting a sense of what it's like to be a police officer confronting people that do or don't have guns. It looks like a very difficult job to do.
I just don't get how in Michigan or some other states you could bring a long-range rifle to your state capitol. You can walk to the gallery. You could point it at a legislator, but you have done nothing wrong until you fire the gun. In other circumstances, if you're someone walking on the street, they're going to chase after you. We don't know, as Eric mentioned, we don't know the impetus, what started this whole thing. But I agree with you, John. Sometimes does it need a chase? I always felt the same way about car chases, a different thing. But get the license plate, get as much information as you can, let the person drive away. What is good is going to come at the end of a fast car chase?
Well, yeah, and John Hansen, the truth is that they have curtailed car chases for exactly that reason, that they don't do those kind of car chases nearly as much as they used to, because people were getting T-boned and things innocent people who in motorists were getting killed in these car chases over, an expired tag. Yeah, or something.
Right.
The pivot on that came because of the money, because of the lawsuits. It wasn't necessarily, the impetus wasn't necessarily about maybe doing the right thing. John Hansen said, the impetus, a lot of that was because, now these cities are broke. And so we don't want to be paying this money out to the families of those who've been killed or to those who've been injured in these kinds of crashes.
See, Eric, I'm actually a little encouraged by how quickly the videos have been coming out recently. Maybe I'm just naive, but Laquan McDonald was a year or more afterwards. The raid on Enginette Young was a year. And I feel like this has been the response from COPA and the mayor to get these things out. I mean, I don't know how quickly you can do it, but two, 3 weeks seems about right to me. I don't know.
Columbus, Ohio got that shooting video out in about 6 hours.
Sure.
And it was the next day up in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, when the young man was killed.
You think that helps, Eric? Do you think that diffuses some of this?
I think it does.
You are writing about that in the Tribune. It's instead of 60 days, what's your suggestion?
60 hours seems like a reasonable time limit.
Boy, I sure think that if nothing else, police training. So Illinois is going to lose a congressional seat. People say because of taxes, they're fleeing the state. Crime and corruption in our survey were a strong 2 and 3, but it's taxes. They don't like it here. They're gone. We lose a congressional seat. The map's going to get redrawn then. When they do that, is it like completely different districts, or do they just carve out a new district in a certain area? Does every district now change?
Every district gets changed a little bit because you're having to move. We're taking 18 districts and making it 17. And so everything's going to have to change a little bit. And the question is going to be, right now it's 13 Democratic districts, essentially, and five Republican districts. And the talk is they're going to whittle things down and move lines around so that there's just four Republican districts and sort of combine the districts of some incumbents. Democrats are in charge of the map making process right now. And so that's what it seems likely that they're going to do.
I love the hypocrisy of it, that Democrats run on, you know, we are going to be as fair as we can. I know the governor's in a little bit of this too. Gerrymandering is bad, but boy, when you're one of the blue states and you've got a blue legislature, they're going to jump on. And I don't blame them. Well, the rules are what they are. If you're not going to have a nationwide rules, then why should the blue states play by some rules while red states play by others?
I think because they're the right rules. That's why. I mean, yeah. It's never going to get fixed unless one of the sides, when it's their turn, doesn't exercise revenge on the other side. That's
you think
why.
That you think if Illinois doesn't do it, that there's going to be that North Carolina, although they now have some more judicial regulations on that, but Wisconsin is going to follow suit, John, if Illinois does the right thing.
I'm Jeffersonian. I would drop a grid on the state and say we'll just color in all the squares until we get the appropriate population and then move on. And I don't care who's living in those squares. That was my friend Jefferson's idea.
Yeah, well, your friend Jefferson was not living in the time of the Voting Rights Act, where you can't do that to communities of color and communities of interest. But beyond that, I think John Hanson makes an excellent point, which is maybe what we ought to do is Illinois ought to pass a Fair Maps Amendment that's contingent on Wisconsin passing a Fair Maps Amendment. And Wisconsin passes one that's contingent on Illinois so that they kind of hold hands and jump together. Because otherwise, you're just asking – you're asking the Democrats in Illinois to sort of unilaterally lay down their arms in this war when you've got a very close U.S. Congress and you've got state legislatures that are hanging in the balance. And so if Illinois just says, okay, well, we're going to a fair map in Illinois would have about 10 Democrats and 7 Republicans.
What does that mean? Fair map? Because that represents how the state votes.
Yes, if you look at how the state overall congressional votes, overall presidential votes, you see it's about 57% Democratic and 43% Republican in right now. And so if you were to have that percentage breakdown, it would be about 10 to 7 in the next map.
And what do you think?
It's not going to be 10 to 7 for sure. it might be 12 to 5, but it's probably, I'm sorry, yeah, 12 to 5. But what I'm saying is that if you ask the Democrats to sort of unilaterally give up several seats in Congress when Congress is split as close as it is, and the control of the House is vitally important to the Biden agenda, I think that's too big an ask for a political party because politics is hardball.
That's interesting.
You can be principled about it, but you end up losing your policy initiatives.
I've seen some Illinois maps drawn by Dave Wasserman of Cook Political that is 14-3 Democrats Republican. I've seen him draw some maps that New York could wipe away almost all of their Republican districts if they wanted to do so and had the political will. Now, there is challenges, obviously, to courts, and that can raise a lot of other issues, and that can go back and forth for a long time. But yeah, there's no good guys in politics at the end of the day, right? I feel like you got to try and win with the game with the rules that are currently there.
Do the red states does this go on in Oklahoma and Alabama? Do they do the same thing?
Yes. Montana right now, they're going to get a second congressional district after having only one. And there is a way to draw it as a one Democrat, one Republican. They're absolutely not going to do that. The Montana legislature is going to go 2-0. They're going to make sure that the big cities of Billings or whatever it is in Montana gets drawn. Arizona the same way. Republicans, the red states do this all the time.
Lisa, where is the governor on this? Which initiative does he support?
Thank you for asking me that question that it's hard to answer. He said that initially he would veto a partisan map. And then he said, I believe it was this week, that he would veto an unfair map, leaving it sufficiently vague as to what that means. And now all the Republicans are going after him for flip-flopping, saying, see, this is going to be a partisan map, and we're all going to be basically screwed at the end of the day. It's for sure going to be a Republican seat wiped off the map. So there are various views on whether that's going to be Adam Kinzinger's district in sort of north central Illinois, or is it a downstate seat that Rodney Davis has?
What about that crazy ass lady that said Hitler, Hitler had some good ideas? What about her?
There's discussion Miller? About whether her seat. I will not respond to that. I want to be objective.
Okay. Well, if I didn't say crazy ass, could you tell me what the chances?
Mary Miller. There's a chance that she might be her district might be wiped away.
Well, and of course they are. If they get rid of Kinzinger's district, then he may, as I think he's even said.
Yeah, he's been acting this way.
That he might just say, "Well, heck, I'll run for governor. I'll run for senator." And we've talked about his prospects in a party that he's the anti-Trump Republican running in a Trump-dominated.
Yeah, what a
party.
Shame, Eric. Of all of the congressmen, I think in Illinois, I kind of liked the way he played ball in the last couple of years.
I don't agree with him on a lot of things, but I've spoken highly of him. I think he's a person of integrity, and I think that it would be smart for the Democrats to try to keep him in Congress by letting him keep his district,
right?
Assuming that he's going to win his district,
right?
But this puts J.B. Pritzker in a very awkward spot because he campaigned pretty vehemently on the idea. First of all, he said he wasn't going to sign any map that was drawn by politicians. That's not going to happen because the politicians are going to draw this map. So no matter what it is, he'd have to veto it. And of course, the reason that he campaigned on this so strongly was because, in poll after poll from the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute, and they do a lot of statewide polling, this idea of nonpartisan maps, of have an independent map making commission has about, 60 to 70% approval. It is very popular when you ask people about it. It's like an elected school board. It's very popular.
Is it popular though until people want the details and then they
that's certainly what happened, John. That's certainly what happened with the graduated income tax. That polled very highly as well in the Paul Simon polls up until the referendum was on the ballot. So I don't know how popular it is, and I don't know. But Pritzker's in a position where I don't think he's going to veto.
Well, wait a minute. Until some powerful Republicans sent out a different message that they poured a ton of money into advertising and sent out a different message, and that's when it.
You're talking about the fair tax or redistricting? What are you talking about?
You're talking about the fair tax, no?
Yeah,
you're talking about the fair tax, and you're also talking about the intersection of the ComEd scandal that drew Mike Madigan into it. I mean, it's far more complex.
Could Pritzker veto this, trusting and knowing that a veto override could save his butt? He could be against this on record and let the legislature override the veto.
Yeah, they'll take care of it.
He might, of course, the risk, again, just for those who are not paying close attention to this, is that if they don't come up with a map by June 30th, I think, am I right on that deadline, Lisa?
Well, I thought it was, there seems to be some debate about that they need to use the numbers, those need to arrive by June, but that October 5th is actually the drop dead time. So that's even in debate right now.
But somebody else will draw it for them, right?
Then they form a commission, and then the commission gets a ninth. There's an 8-person commission, and it's 4 and 4 of the parties, and then they draw straws or a ping pong ball or something like that to decide the ninth member.
Government at work.
And so basically it would become a 50-50 proposition that Republicans would be able to draw the map. And if they drew the map, then they would get their 10 to 7 or maybe, 9 to 6. I don't know what they would be able to draw given their clever map-making skills. But that would be a huge risk for the Democrats. And I don't know if Pritzker, as much of a, he wants to stand on principle on this. I think he's going to realize that the hardball politics means that he's going to have to sign that map.
Well, I don't know if he's flip-flopped or not, but I do have a flip-flop joke for you. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah.
Yes.
A guy with two left feet walks into a shoe store and says, "Hey, do you have flip-flips?" That's all I got.
Speed jokes!
That's what we do. Weekdays at 9:35, we tell 10 jokes or so every day just like that. And I'm telling you, it is the hit of my show, which tells you something about the other 2.5 hours of my show. John Hansen filled in for me the other day, and I heard he went rogue and told his own jokes on my show, and that they were pretty good.
Yeah. I'm sorry, John. I didn't know I wasn't supposed, I didn't know that was going rogue. I'll blame Aleph on that one.
No, it's okay. I'm not keeping score. Well, listen, John, it was sure nice of you to join us today.
Thank you, Eric Zorn,
Lisa Donovan from the Chicago Tribune. I'm John Williams. This show is produced by Aleph Garris. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you, John Hansen. That was fun.
Good to see you.
Anytime you need me.
Bye, kids. We'll post it soon.
Good to see you, Lisa. Bye.
Bye.
John.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNRadio.com.